Just a little bit about me. So I serve as the principal of Vos Seminary. Vos Seminary is it's a college where we train people to be Christian pastors, where we train them to be leaders and equip them for whatever it is that God might be calling them to. Some go out and they work cross-culturally as missionaries, wherever it is that they go to. Some work as chaplains, some work as pastors in churches. Some just go and work in the not-for-profit sector, and God uses them there in an amazing way. Some are just Christian people who say, I want to get to know God better. I want to get to know a little bit more about what God is wanting for me from my life. And they get to know the scriptures in a way, a little deeper way than there might be possible at a usual church service. Now, if you might be interested in studying with us, feel free to chat to me about that. Or at the back there, I've got some little documents there. We've got our seminary prospectus, which tells you what we do. And there's also the latest Vos newsletter, which tells you just some of the news of what's been going on there. Something that you might be interested in, because you may say, where is Vos? Well, it's across the road from Curtin University, and you may say, it's quite a long way from here. We have a little hub that meets at Joondalup, at Lake Joondalup Baptist College, actually. And if you're interested in doing our Certificate 4, it meets there one night of a week. And so if you're interested in studying with us, but you thought going all the way through to Curtin would be too difficult, you could maybe pick up some studies there. Or if you're wanting, you know, to do the go the whole hog and do everything with us, you're very welcome to come through to the Bentley campus. We offer courses from a Certificate 4 all the way through to the Doctor of Philosophy degree, so a wide range of courses there. And you can also do them by distance. You can do them online as well, so that's another way you can study. But hey, I didn't come here today to talk to you about Vos. I mean, I love talking about Vos because I teach there, and I think it's a wonderful thing to be involved in the training of God's people. But I came to unpack to you something of God's word today. So that's what I'm going to do. And it's my great privilege to be able to bring a message that looks at just one of the most important Christian doctrines that there is, that of grace. Grace. And I wonder if you've ever thought, so what does grace actually mean? What does grace actually mean? It was a number of years back at a conference where there were people who were professors of religion, of all the different world religions in there. They'd gathered together for a conference. And during the tea break, they were just talking together. And as they were talking together, they asked this question. So what is it that is unique about Christianity? What is it that you find in Christianity that you won't find in any other religion in the world? And if you were asked that question, I wonder how you would answer it. And as the people there thought about it, someone said, I know what it is. It's Christmas. It's this idea that God came and lived amongst us. You won't find that in any of the other religions in the world, that God came and lived amongst us. But as that person said that, someone else said, I beg your pardon. There are some religions in the world that claim that the gods have come and lived amongst us. That's not actually true. Christianity is not unique when it says that. And so some said, oh, well, I think it's probably this wonderful moral teaching that you find in Christianity, because Christianity is just a wonderful code of conduct, and it tells you how to live your life in a really good way. That is the thing that's unique about it. And someone said, beg your pardon. I mean, that's a bit patronizing. I mean, all the religions in the world, they have great moral codes. And you can't say that Christianity is the only one that teaches a good code to live by. That's not unique to Christianity. Some people, oh, okay, well, this is getting a bit difficult. And someone else says, oh, well, if it's not Christmas, it has to be Easter. It has to be the idea that the God died and came back alive again. That must be the thing that is unique to Christianity. And again, someone said, beg your pardon. There are, if you go to some religious faiths, they also tell stories of gods who die and gods who come back to life again. So you cannot say that this is unique to Christianity. And it was at that point in this discussion that C.S. Lewis, some of you might have read some of his work, he's a famous Christian apologist from a number of years back, he walked into the room and they said to him, well, Lewis, you tell us, what is it that's unique about Christianity? And he said, that's easy. That's easy. It's grace. Grace is the thing that is unique to Christianity. And as people sat and they thought about it, they realized that C.S. Lewis, as usual, was right. That an actual fact that you don't find in any other religion in the world, this idea that God loves us accepts us, forgives us, not because of what we have done, not because of what we have done, but because of who God is. That's the nature of grace. To actually say that God looks at us and He loves us, not because we are impressive, not because God looks at us and says, wow, you're amazing, you're incredible. Not because God looks at us and says, you've worked hard enough, you got there. But simply because God says, I love you because that's who I am. That's grace. Now let's just dig into this a little bit more. How can we understand grace? Grace is needed when? Well, grace is needed. You may say, well, what's so important about grace? Why do we need grace? Well, grace is needed because in life, stuff happens. And sometimes that stuff isn't good stuff. So what do you do in life if stuff happens and it's not good stuff and you're actually to blame for it? What do we do when something goes wrong and someone is to blame? Now, if you go through Scripture, you'll see that it explores a couple of different models for us. It looks at different ways in which we could respond. And if you have a Bible with you, you might like to look at one of the very first of these responses. You find it in Genesis chapter 4, verses 23 and 24. Genesis chapter 4, verses 23 and 24. And it's a little account of a man by the name of Lamech. And Lamech, let's see what actually happens. I'll read the passage to you. Lamech, and it comes from Genesis chapter 4, verses 23, 24. Lamech said to his wives, Ada and Zillah, listen to me. Wives of Lamech, hear my words. You can imagine the kind of man he was. He was the kind of man who told his wives what to do. Come listen to me. I'm a great man. And this is what I'm going to say to you. Ada and Zillah, listen to me. Wives of Lamech, hear my words. I have killed a man for wounding me. I have killed a man for wounding me. A young man for injuring me. If Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times. If Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times. Do you see what's happening here? Lamech says, you know, there I was going out, and a young man came to me, and he did me some harm. He injured me in some way. But I showed him, didn't I? Because I killed him. So if anyone does anything wrong to me, then I will kill them. I will annihilate them. If someone does this much wrong to me, I will give them that much back. And that's one model of how we can respond when something goes wrong. It's a model that says, hey, if someone does something to me, well, they better think about it twice, three times, four times, five times, 55 times, 77 times, because actually, if anyone does anything to me, I will pay them back over and over and over and over again, and I will give them much more than they ever gave to me. That's the model of Lamech. And it's one way in which people often respond to life when things go wrong. So if someone does something wrong to you, you say, I will pay you back majorly. You lie to me. You cheat me in some way. You pinch my parking spot. You know, as I'm going to go into the supermarket, you pinch my parking spot. I will smash into your car, or I will kill you, which is what Lamech did. It's a huge escalation. It's like, wow, I'll never pinch that guy's parking bag again. Never, ever. Do you see what Lamech is saying? That's how we respond. Now, is that a helpful way to respond? No, it's a terrible way to respond. And the Bible makes that quite clear. In fact, remember, Lamech says if Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times. Does that trigger any memory in your mind? Do you remember Jesus was asked how often we should forgive? How should we forgive? Should we forgive seven times? No, says Jesus, 77 times, or 70 times seven. You can translate it different ways. But what Jesus is doing is he's taking Lamech's answer and he's saying Lamech was completely wrong. Lamech says we must escalate this 77 times. I say we must forgive 77 times. Just move in the exact opposite direction to the one that Lamech does. Because if we go and do what Lamech does, then things just keep on getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Because what happens is I step on your toe, so I break your leg back. So then you've got to chop my head off. So then my family's got to kill your family. So then your family's got to kill our country. I mean, it just goes worse and worse and worse and worse. That's the first model. And Jesus makes it quite clear. It just does not work. It just does does not work. So what does the Bible then look at as a second model? The second model that Jesus, that the Bible looks at is the one that you find in Exodus. Exodus chapter 21. It's the well-known model. And you find it there in Exodus chapter 21, verse 23. If there is serious injury, Exodus 21, 23. If there is serious injury, you are to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. It's the old eye for eye principle. And it was part of the Jewish law. And what this law says, well, you know, we can't go and do what Lamech did. You can't have it so that if something little goes wrong, we just escalate it out of all proportion. That's just no way to live life. So the law comes and says, what you must do is if something goes wrong, you pay back, but you pay back exactly what happened to you. So if someone kicks you, you kick them back. But it's more than that. Someone kicks you, you try to say, how hard did they kick me? They kicked me that hard, okay? Then I can't kick them that hard back. I can only kick them that hard back because it's eye for eye, tooth for tooth. So if someone knocks out your tooth, what must you do? You must say, well, which tooth was it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It was that one there. Okay, just stand there, please, for a moment. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Boom. Okay, your tooth is out for, as well. No, it's very fair, the system, isn't it? It's designed to say, listen, if something goes wrong, you just do the same thing back. And it's absolutely even and it's fair, it's just measure. And in many ways, that's a good, solid system. So if something goes wrong, what should you do? You should do exactly the same thing back. Except, and this is what Calvin Miller says, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, a just, fair, and rapid way to a sightless, toothless world. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, a just, fair, and rapid way to a sightless, toothless world. Because why? Well, in the end, we all do things wrong. And whenever we do things wrong, someone does the same thing back to us. Well, it just goes tit for tat, tit for tat, tit for tat. And it doesn't really solve anything, does it? It doesn't solve anything. Which is why Jesus comes along and in his remarkable, remarkable Sermon on the Mount starts to speak about grace. And so in Matthew chapter 5, from verses 38 to 45, and I'm just selecting out portions from it, he says, you have heard that the law of Moses says, if an eye is injured, injure the eye of the person who did it. If a tooth gets knocked out, knock out the tooth of the person who did it. You have heard that the law of Moses says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies. I say, love your enemies. I say, do good to those who do wrong to you. And you say, why would I ever do that? Why would I ever do that? But Jesus says, because there is no other way to make your enemies your friends. There is no other way to make your enemies your friends. And he's recognizing that grace is at the heart of everything and grace changes everything. Let me give you a silly story from my childhood. If you can imagine a time when I was 3 years old. No, I accept that that's a bit of imagination required at this point in my life. But at any rate, when I was a three-year-old, my parents took myself and my two sisters along to a wedding. And then after the wedding, there was a reception. And the reception, it's not a good idea to have young children at a reception, particularly not a reception where the people making the speeches go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. So the people just talking on and on. And as a three-year-old, I just became more and more restless, became more and more naughty, played up more and more, and was a real distraction. And it was just embarrassing for my parents. And my father, I can remember him saying to me, if you don't settle down and sit still, you're going to catch it later. And in that moment, I thought, later, so he knows he can't do anything with all these people watching. It's too embarrassing. So I can do whatever I like now. And later, well, when you're 3 year old, well, later, it doesn't matter at all. So just went wild through the reception and probably had far too much sugar and everything else. And that was great. But then the reception did come to the end. And we left. My father said, so do you want it now or later when we get home? locker room saying, later, when we get home. And thinking of this terrible punishment that was going to come. Got home, and my father then came to me and said, so do you want it now or later after dinner? Later after dinner. And dinner came and went. And he said, so do you want it now or later after your bath? Later after my bath, thank you. And so I had a bath. And then we went to bed. And I remember my father opening the door and he came into the room and he said, now you're going to get it. And my heart just sank as I thought this terrible punishment I was going to get. And with that, my father put his hand into his pocket and he pulled out a chocolate bar and he gave it to me. And he walked out the room. And would someone like this chocolate bar? Yeah, someone there. Anyone? Catch it over there. There you go. Now, some of the 50 years have gone by, and I still think, why did he do that? Because that's not what I deserved. That's not what I deserved at all. But you see, there's something about grace that just strikes you. And there's something about grace that says, that's not what I was expecting. That's not what I deserved. That's not right. That's not what should happen. That's not the way it should be. And you realize, there's a bigger picture here. That behind that, there is someone who loves me and someone who cares for me and someone who's doing this not because of what I've done, but because of who they are. That's what God's grace is about. You see, you look at the cross of Jesus and you say, why is that happening? Why is it that Jesus, who lived this perfect life, why is it that he's the one who's dying? He is not the one who sinned. He is not the one who did wrong. He is not the one who rebelled against God. But why is he the one who's dying? But he is. And we look there and say, why? God, why would you do that instead of doing that to me? Why do you give me grace instead of punishment? And we realize it is because God truly loves us. And God really, really, really wants to be in relationship with us. It's extraordinarily hard to understand. But it goes to the heart of what the gospel, the good news of Jesus, was all about. It's saying God knows all these things that we have done, but reaches out to us in love to forgive us. That is the good news. Now, Jesus told a parable about this. It's a parable of the workers in the vineyard. I don't know if you know this particular parable. It's one that it isn't most people's favorite, but I actually think it should be our favorite parable, because when you think about it and when you understand it, it's an amazing parable. There, Matthew chapter 20. You read it when you've got some time. I'll just recap the story just very quickly to us. It's a story of a man. He's got a vineyard and he wants some people to work in it. And so he goes off at the start of what the Jewish day was, 6 o'clock in the morning, is when sun rose, that's when the day began. And the custom of the day was, if you didn't have work, you would go through to the marketplace. And if someone was looking for workers, they would find you gathered there in the marketplace and they would offer you work. And the idea was that you'd just get your work for the day. And the standard payment in those days was a denarius. And that was the rate of pay for a day's work. So the parable goes, the man goes off, he needs some people to help him in his vineyard. He goes there in the morning, he chooses the number of people he thinks he's going to need, says, come do some work for me and I'll pay you what's right, which is the denarius. And so they go off and they go and they work in the vineyard. But it seems as though the man, as he looks at the vineyard and all the grapes that needed to be picked, decides in the middle of the day that actually still needs some more people. This harvest needs to be brought in. So he goes back to the marketplace and there's some people who hadn't been employed and they're still waiting around there just hoping that someone will come. And he says, come work in my vineyard and I'll pay you what's right. And so another batch of people go off and they go and they work in the vineyard. And still, not enough gets done, and it's only 1 hour left in the day. They used to work 12-hour days then, 6 in the morning to 6 at night. So 5 o'clock in the afternoon, goes back, and he sees that there's still some people who have not been employed. And he says, come quickly, come work in the vineyard and pick the grapes. I need someone, I'll do the right thing by you. Come and do some work. And they come, and they work for 1 hour. And then it's payday, it's pay time at the end of the day, because you got paid at the end of the day. And the people who've been working 1 hour, they come along and the owner of the vineyard puts his hand into his pocket and he gives them a denarius. And they're like, ooh, this is great. This guy's a bit silly, because why is he giving me a full denarius when I only worked 1 hour? I should only get a 12th of a denarius. Thank you very much. But I'm not complaining. This is very good news. And they're delighted. And all the other people watching, they're like, wow, this guy's a real soft touch. You know, just think how much we're going to get paid. And so the people who have been working for half the day start to think, oh, we're probably going to get 6 denarii. This is great. But when they come to be paid, the owner of the vineyard puts his hand in his pocket and gives them a denarius. Now, they feel a little bit conflicted. They're like, well, you can't complain because we're only supposed to have got half a denarius, but, you know, we'd hope that we're going to get 6 seeing what the others got. So they kind of just smile and they walk off, think they've done reasonably well. Those who have worked the full day come along and they think, well, I wonder what we're going to get. It's going to be better than we expected, I'm sure. But the owner of the vineyard puts his hand in his pocket and gives them what? 1 denarius. That's a bit disappointing. I mean, all the others got paid more. I mean, why did you give him 1 denarius when they only worked 1 hour? We worked 12 hours. This is just not fair. It's just not right. But I told you I was going to give you 2 denarius. That's what the rate of pay is. What you're complaining about. And so they go away, and there's no case that they can make as such. And that's the story that gets told. Now something that we need to understand, and this is a little bit of background to the story. Because the Bible doesn't tell us this, but we know this through other Jewish tales that went around, that the story that Jesus tells about the workers in the vineyard was a story that actually was very common in Jesus' day. The rabbis had, in fact, created the story. This is not a story that Jesus made up. It's not Jesus' original story. And the way the rabbis told it, they, in fact, had initially told it at a funeral of a very popular rabbi who had died when he was young. And this rabbi who had died young, at his funeral service, this story was told for the very first time. But it was told differently. You see, as people were there at this funeral service of this rabbi who died so young, there was a question that they were all asking themselves. And the question was this: why did God allow someone who was so good to die so young? I mean, it just seems such a waste. I mean, why die young when you have so much to offer? Surely it's not right. And when the story was told the first time, this is how the story finished. You see, when the story is told the first time, the people who have worked for the 12 hours come and they say, why are you paying us only 1 denarius when you paid those people 1 denarius and they only worked 1 hour? And the owner of the vineyard says this in the original version. So listen to this. The owner of the vineyard says this: because though those people only worked for 1 hour, in their 1 hour they worked so hard that they picked as many grapes as you lazy so-and-sos who worked the entire day did in 12 hours. So in the end they picked as many grapes in 1 hour as you picked in 12 hours. So it's perfectly fair that I gave you all 1 denarius because you all picked exactly the same number of grapes. And when that story was first told at this funeral of the man who died young, people said, how did God allow him to die so young? The answer was given, and that's why God allowed him to die so young, because although he was so young, he fitted so much into his life that he did as much as people who lived to be 70, 80, or 90 years did. So there's nothing unjust about taking him home when he's young, because he has already done a life's work. Now that's interesting. Except that when Jesus tells the story, this is the point. When Jesus tells the story, does he finish it like that? No. And this is why this is so interesting. Because you see, if you had been in the crowd that day, just try and put yourself there. Have you ever been in a situation where someone tells you like the story and you've heard it 100 times before and it's got this punchline and you're listening and you're a very polite person, so you know exactly when you're supposed to laugh. And they tell the story and they tell the story and they tell the story and then gets to the punchline and you because it's very funny and it's nice and you've heard the joke 77 times before, but that's what you're supposed to do. But then what happens when you've heard the story and they tell it and they get to the punchline and they get it wrong? Because that's what Jesus does here. He tells this old story that they've all heard over and over again. And they're like, yawn, yawn, yawn. You're usually quite an interesting teacher, Jesus, but this is really boring. We've heard the story so many times before. And then he fluffs the punchline. Because what does he say? I gave you all a denarius. because I wanted to. And if I want to be generous, can't I be generous? No, Jesus, that's not the punchline. The punchline is, we all did exactly the same amount of work. That's what you're supposed to say. You're supposed to say that the people who work for 1 hour somehow managed to fit into that 1 hour as much as people who fit into 12 hours. That's the right thing. That's the eye for eye, tooth for tooth principle. But Jesus, you got it wrong. You said, no, actually what I give you is because I am gracious. Because I'm a God of grace. It's got nothing to do with what you've done. It's got everything to do with my mercy. Everything to do with my love. You see, when we approach God, we constantly go back and we think, somehow it's because I will have worked hard enough. And it's because I will have done enough. It's because I will have impressed God enough. But that's not what it is. It is in fact simply because I say, God, I am undone. Won't you show me your mercy? And God says, I love you because I love you because I love you. Because I love you. It's about the character and nature of God. This is the unique thing about being a Christian. It's about recognizing that God has this audacious love for us. God has this audacious, magnificent love for us that we've never earned, but simply must accept. But we must accept it. We must accept it. You see, God's grace is incredible and it is wonderful, but it must be received. A number of years ago, I grew up in Durban in South Africa, and that's where the accent comes from, if you're wondering. There was a little advertisement that they ran for selling cars back in those days. There was a strange advertisement. It ran that there was a Mercedes-Benz, a near new Mercedes-Benz, just done a few thousand kilometers, and was for sale for 20 cents. And, there was this advertisement. Mercedes Benz for sale, and I can't remember just how many kilometers, 5,000 kilometers on the clock or whatever, 20 cents, phone this number, first to phone gets it. That advertisement ran for 3 weeks before someone phoned and got the Mercedes Benz for 20 cents. I mean, everyone else just assumed that this was too good to be true, that there was a typing error, that it couldn't possibly be right, that it must be wrong. But in actual fact, what had happened was this, that a man had left his wife for his mistress, and he was just that kind of a man. He said to his wife, you know, so just sell Mercedes for me then and send me the money when you got it. And she said, right, I will. And so she sold it for 20 cents and sent him his 20 cents. And someone got a magnificent deal. But no one could believe that this was actually happening. That you could buy a near new Mercedes-Benz, except someone said, maybe it's true. I'll phone. Now, grace almost seems like that, doesn't it? It seems almost too good to be true. How could it be that the God of the universe, the God who made everything, that this God would love me so much? How could that be? But it is. But we have got to phone. We've got to say, yes, we accept the grace that you give us, God. We accept the grace that you give us. Now, there are times when people just, for whatever reason, don't do that. First church I pastored back in Stellenbosch in South Africa, when we had communion, we used to, I don't know how you do it here, but might do it the same way, but in those days we used to have a little communion tray with the bread on and the little glasses, and we would pass them around. They'd go up and down the aisles, and I can remember being the pastor there at that congregation. We'd have communion, and I'd see the cup going around, I'd see the bread going around, the cup going around, and I noticed there was a man in the congregation, Merv was his name, and I noticed that whenever it went around, he never took it. And I thought, why? Why is this man not taking communion? He comes to church quite regularly. Why is he not doing this? So I went up to him one day and I said, Merv, I've just noticed, you know, I hope you don't feel I'm spying on you or something, but I just noticed whenever the communion goes around, you don't take it. Is there a reason? Why aren't you taking the communion? Because I thought, you know, maybe there's some spiritual problem here. And he said to me, Brian, you don't know my whole story. You see me now, and you see my wife, and you see my son, and we're a lovely family, and life is good to us. But what you don't know is that it's not always been like this. He said, I was married before, And there are things in my life that I'm just so deeply ashamed of. He said that in my first marriage, I did things, said things to my wife that, my first wife, that were just terrible, terrible, terrible. And I really just broke her down altogether. She had a complete breakdown. And I've just ruined her life. And I can never forgive myself for what I did to her. And I know that I can never be forgiven for what I've done. So while I sit here and while I'm very grateful for the life I have now, I know that I will never be good enough to take communion because of what I've done. And I said, well, maybe that's not actually how it works. God's forgiveness is, in fact, God's grace is exactly because we have made major mistakes in our life. It's because we've done huge things that are wrong. God does want to forgive you, and you should be able to. I mean, you do all that you can to make things right for things you've done wrong in the past, but God does want to forgive you. And you must take the bread, and you must drink the wine. You know, this is the sign of God's love for you. It is for you. And he said, thank you, but I know what I've done. I mean, forgiveness is for people who swear. Forgiveness is for people who, you know, do little things like that. But for people who mess up people's lives like I did, there's no forgiveness. There's no forgiveness for that. And I said, I think God's grace is bigger than you imagine. God's grace is bigger than you imagine. And he said, well, I'll think about it. And I can remember watching the next time. We used to have communion usually once a month. And watched the next time, and the tray just passed him by. And I thought, he's still there, locked, trapped by guilt. And I tried to speak to him some more, and I think he listened to me. The next month, the communion tray went around, and was fascinating. I actually saw his hand actually hovered over the bread for a moment. So it's like he, you know, all the other times he just passed the tray. This time his hand sort of like hovered there. And then it was though something gripped him and he just passed it on. He didn't take it. And I spoke to him some more. And he seemed a little bit responsive. And the next time the communion went around, he took the bread, he took the wine, and he ate it and he drank it. And he realized that grace really was for him as well. And sometimes for some of us, it takes a long time to realize that actually God didn't just die for other people. Jesus died for me. Jesus died for you. And he died for you whatever you did, whatever it was, whatever your sin, whether it is the grossest of sins, whether you think it's trivial. We all need grace. And for all of us, we have not earned it. It has been given by the God who loves us audaciously. And grace is the unique thing about being a Christian. It is the unique thing about Christianity is that God loves you. But if you have never said yes to God's love, perhaps today is the day to do that. Because grace must be accepted. Grace must be accepted. And no matter what you have done, it is not too big for God's love to forgive it. So if you've never said yes to Jesus, why not say yes to him?